Guna Part 2, and that is, what does halacha allow for women whose husbands refuse to give them a religious divorce? Without a religious divorce, a woman is not allowed to get married. If she gets married, she's committing adultery. Any children that she has have the taint of mamzer. They're not allowed to marry any other Jew except another mamzer or a convert or a ger. And whoever they marry, whether they marry a convert or a ger, the child is still going to a convert or a mamzer, the child is going to be a mamzer. Getting a civil divorce, as we know, does not in and of itself terminate a halachic marriage. So this is with the issue of aguna. Aguna means an anchored woman, a stranded woman, a woman that's not able to remarry. Let me first mention a few solutions that have been recommended by the halachic system over the years, and then we'll see why some of them may not work today. The first issue is the following. Halacha recognizes the following proposition, that when a Beis Din has ordered a man to give a get to his wife, we'll discuss when will they do that. When a Beis Din has ordered that a man give a get to his wife, halacha permits the decision of the Beis Din to be enforced even by physical punishment. Right, this is a principle that's called in the Gemara, kofin oso, we can force a person, even by threatening to break his arm or by breaking his arm, ad sheyomar, until he says, rotza ani, I want. But again, I want to emphasize this once again. If and only if a Jewish court of law, a Beis Din, has ordered a man to give a get, then any way of force, any type of force, may be employed to ensure that the person carry out the order. This could be threat of violence, this could be forfeiture of money, this could be use of non-Jewish authorities, such as going to a secular court, but only if a Beis Din has ordered that the man give a get. So the question now becomes, when will a Beis Din order a man to give a get? Right, that's the $64,000 question, because depending on when the Beis Din can order the get to be given will depend on whether force could be permitted to carry it out. So here there's a very big machlokas. Again, all the proofs from the Gemara we don't have time to get into. You'd have to learn a lot of Gemaras. But the bottom line is there's a basic machlokas between the Rambam and everybody else as to when a Beis Din can force a man to give a get, or can order a man to give a get, which he could then be forced to give. The Rambam has a very, very, what we would call supportive view. The Rambam says, if a woman declares, ma'is alai means my husband is repulsive to me, I do not want to live with this man anymore. Even if she provides no substantiation, even if she gives no reason, in other words, this she just says, I don't want to be with him anymore. The Rambam says the following, a woman, this is actually his words, a woman is not a captive slave that she can be forced to be with somebody that she doesn't want to be with. So according to the Rambam, a woman could in fact get a get. Well, I shouldn't say get a get, because remember, the husband may not give it to her. But a woman is entitled to have a Beis Din order the man to give her a get. For no reason at all, other than simply she says she doesn't want to live with him anymore. Now, if according to the Rambam, that would be enough of a reason for the Beis Din to issue the order, it would then stand to reason, once they issue an order, that could be enforced by coercion and everything else. Now, the thing is the following. This is the Rambam's view. Most of the other great commentators, actually led by Rabbeinu Tam, you know Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Tam, our rabbi, the perfect one, is a pun. His name was Rav Yaakov. He was Rashi's grandson. And Yaakov is described in the Torah as Ish Tam, a perfect, simple person. So Rabbeinu Tam was so highly esteemed that Rav Yaakov ben Meir was called Rabbeinu Tam. By the way, just a little bibliographic information here. Rav Yaakov, Rabbeinu Tam's older brother, his name was Shmuel. and he is the Rashbam, also a very, very famous commentator. So Rashbam, Rav Shmuel ben Meir, and Rabbeinu Tam, Rav Yaakov ben Meir, were the sons of Meir. Rav Meir was Rashi's son-in-law. Rashi had no sons. Rashi only had daughters. And they are among the great poskim. But in terms of impact on halacha, Rabbeinu Tam's impact is greater. Rabbeinu Tam was an extremely eminent and great posek. And Rabbeinu Tam absolutely rejects the Rambam's view, although I don't believe he quotes the Rambam. Rabbeinu Tam says like this, Chas v'shalom, that we should allow a woman to simply get out of a marriage by alleging she can't stand to be with the guy. Why? Because perhaps her motivation is she simply wants to marry somebody else. And Rabbeinu Tam says it would be destructive to the institution of marriage to let a woman get a get by simply alleging ma'is alai. And therefore Rabbeinu Tam learns in order for a woman to obtain a get, well, I don't want to say obtain a get because that's a second step. In order for a woman to obtain an order of a beis din, see, a woman doesn't obtain a get. Ultimately, the husband has to give her the get. But I mean to say, in order to get an order of a beis din, that the husband must give a get, there needs to be something more than her claim. I don't want to be with him. Now, he doesn't say how much more, but again, this would generally be in the area of abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, non-support, right? A refusal to provide support, a refusal to cohabit, right? A refusal to have marital intercourse, or even an inability to have marital intercourse. The grounds for that type. Now, let me explain one thing. The truth of the matter is, in America, whether you follow the Rambam or Rabbeinu Tam almost doesn't make a difference. Let me explain why. Let's say you have a beis din in America that decides to follow the Rambam. So they order the man to give the gets because she says ma'asala. But in America, just because the beis din ordered the get, who's going to force the guy to give it? Because the decision of a rabbinical court is not enforceable in the United States because of separation of church and state. Now, it is true that you could hire goons or hire the mafia, meaning to say if a beis din ordered a man to give a get, even in the United States, that would be a green light to hire the mafia, which may or may not work. But in terms of, certainly a beis din would never say that. A beis din would not say publicly. Right? If a beis din ordered a man to give a get, a beis din would not say publicly, go hire the mafia to force him to do it, because the beis din would get an extreme trouble. So what I'm saying is the following. In America, whether a beis din follows the Rambam and orders the get, or whether the beis din follows Rabbeinu Tam and wouldn't order the get unless there'd be something plus, that really does not solve the woman's problem. Because the most that will give her is the order of a beis din, but the order of a beis din does not turn into her having her get. Now, in Israel, the situation is very, very different. In Israel,
la halacha, if the beis din says orders the guy to give a get, they'll give it. The lady can hire someone to.
Yes, la halacha, she can hire.
She's not over if like the guy gives a. Is the guy's in the over if they like give him a chabura?
No, because la halacha, once a beis din has ordered the get, it can be forced, and therefore, even if they hurt him or kill him, in the eyes of halacha, that's not a problem.
So they can even kill the guy.
Well, they don't deliberately kill him, but they can apply physical force until he agrees to give the get.
That would also fall under kofa
noser. That's right.
That's correct.
Achutetze nafsha, until he dies. Now, but I want to emphasize how important this is. The ability to use physical force or threats does not come into being until the beis din has issued an order. Now, if they issue an order based on the Rambam's opinion, it's fairly easy for a woman to get such an order. If they require an order based on Rabbeinu Tam, it's much more complicated. Because according to Rabbeinu Tam, let's assume a woman has to allege that the reason why she doesn't want to be married to the guy is because he refuses to have marital intercourse. If the husband could then show, then you get into a very messy morass. If the husband can then show, well, I don't have marital intercourse with her because she's been unfaithful, etc., the beis din would have to determine who's at fault. See, like the Rambam, that whole issue does not have to be determined. Now, let me just say that. Now, the thing is this. In America, because of the inability of a beis din to enforce its decision, even if a woman has that beis din order, there's not a lot that's going to happen. There'll be some things that'll happen I'll talk about. In Israel, whether a woman can get that order or not is very, very important. And the reason it's very important is that in Israel, because the rabbinic courts are part of the court system, right? The rabbinic courts in Israel are part of the legal structure of the state. As you would expect, Israel does not have, although some secularists and actually some religious even would actually like there to be a separation of church and state. That is not the system that exists in the state of Israel, right? Even if you're totally not religious, if you want to get married in the state of Israel, you have to be married by a halachic, in a halachic ceremony. That's why some people go to Cyprus, right? That's right, because Cyprus is where, you know, you can get married. See, Israel will recognize any marriage that was valid where it was performed. So if your marriage is valid under Cyprus law, you can come to Israel and you have a legal marriage. But within the geographical boundaries of Israel, only a religious marriage ceremony is valid. The same thing is true for all faith groups. There is the equivalent. I didn't mean to say only Jewish. But each faith community is officially governed by its highest body. So the Islamic communities in Israel are governed by the Sharia, which is kind of the Islamic Supreme Council of Religious Matters. So it's the same thing. A Muslim, an Arab, cannot have a civil ceremony. It'll be marriage under the laws of the Quran. Yeah, and I didn't mean to suggest an Arab has to get married in front of a I mean, Israel does not recognize civil marriages, but it does recognize the autonomy of each group to be governed by its own authority. I mean, this goes back, I wouldn't say this is necessarily because of any love of religion on the part of the state. I mean, this goes back to British mandate. In fact, this goes back to the Ottoman Turks. And this was always the tradition here for hundreds and hundreds of years. Now, here's the thing. So in Israel, once a woman gets an order of a rabbinic court that the husband is obligated to give her a get, if he refuses to give a woman a get, Israeli law, not halakha, Israeli law provides he can be imprisoned until he complies with the order of the base. Now, that's not as far as halakha would permit. Halakha would even permit more. Halakha would even permit beating him. Israeli law does not go as far as Jewish law. Israeli law does permit imprisonment. Now, but even so, keep in mind, imprisonment will only be there if the base didn't order the get. If the base didn't order the get, she's in trouble even in Israel. Now, even in Israel, there's no guarantee that imprisonment is going to do the trick. As I mentioned the other day, number one, a lot of the guys who don't give gittin to their wives are already in jail anyway, and some of them are serving life sentences. And if imprisonment is the maximum sentence that's allowed under Israeli law, it's not necessarily going to make it worse. You can have solitary confinement, but some of these guys are in solitary confinement too. So, you know, there's not a lot. I mean, again, halacha would permit us to beat the guy, but Israeli law does not go that far.
So you could, under Israeli law now, are you allowed to hire someone to go and beat him up?
No. Halacha permits it, but under Israeli law, it would be the same as American law. That would be assault and battery.
Right.
But halachically you can.
Yes, yes, just like in America. Sure.
But
I
wonder how to disobey the country.
Well, generally speaking, that is true, but the question becomes, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of giving the get, in issues of marriage and divorce, we normally don't follow the laws of the country. In other words, marriage and divorce are governed exclusively by the laws of the Torah. Now, in Israel, there's a certain overlap, but still, if there's any conflict, one would follow the halacha in that case.
I'm curious as to if you're in a community and it's known that if a beis din makes this demand that the man give a get, and it's known that the halakha is that force can be applied, and then say this guy, you know, is found beaten on the side of the road, whether or not then the Beis Din becomes an accessory to a crime.
That's correct. Well, no. I mean,
it's known that such a thing can happen. It seems as if even though the Beis Din didn't say go out and beat the guy up, they kind of gave tacit agreement to.
Well, I would say that would be an unfair position to take. I mean, because the Beis Din does have a moral and religious duty to apply Jewish law, and the fact that zealots in the community carry it out in violation of secular law, I don't think anyone would blame a court for that. As long as the court did not intimate or hint or suggest, the fact that they know there are extremists, you know, doesn't mean.
If the court sends a guy to jail, I mean, beat him up in jail.
Right. It happens.
Court is,
right, there were lynched, right? When a black was sentenced for a crime in the South, sometimes even if he wasn't sentenced, but if he was sentenced, if he was convicted, so very often he would be lynched before, you know. They would lynch him. They would hang him before he even went to jail. If he was accused of raping a white woman, right? So we're not going to say that, you know, the judge was an accessory to that murder, although sometimes, you know, he may have been.
Of course.
Yeah. So I wouldn't go that far. In fact, as far as I know, I think there's an article recently that the truth is, in fact, somebody brought it up here, the police. Sometimes the police turn their head the other way, meaning. Sometimes you figure that these guys who don't give get, you know, may deserve to get beaten up, and they don't really bother prosecuting. And of course, in Israel, you have another problem. In Israel, as you know, the police are sometimes, not always, sometimes, they're excessively strict, but sometimes they avoid getting involved in Haredi disputes. because, you know, just it's not worth their time, and it's going to happen to them. So, you know, if in Meir Sharim some guy's getting beaten up because he didn't give a get, the police really don't want to get involved in it. You know, just not going to be worth it. It's not going to be worth it. You know, they'll be picking in day and night and whatever it is, and other things. So there is kind of almost an immunity within certain communities that they can kind of do their own thing. Now. Alright, so let me just mention this. We have this big machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and the Rambam. I should say that the vast majority of halachic consensus, and this is a little disheartening for women, but the vast majority of halachic consensus has not accepted the Rambam's view. In fact, in the Shulchan Aruch, you know, the Shulchan Aruch, which was written by Rav Yosef Karo in the 1400s, the Shulchan Aruch follows the Rambam in probably 85 to 90% of the entire Shulchan Aruch follows the Rambam's view. In this particular issue, the Rambam's view is not even quoted in the Shulchan Aruch as a minority opinion. It simply is totally out of the picture. And we have a general shita in halacha that any views that are not even quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. Sometimes Shulchan Aruch will quote it as a Yesh Omrim, some people say, at least it's a minority position. A view that is not even quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, it seems to be really kind of a dead view, a view that one is not even allowed to resuscitate, simply because of the fact that Rav Yosef Karo and the Ramah both seem to have followed the view of Rabbeinu Tam. Now I know that some more modern rabbis, Rav Shlomo Riskin, has actually argued, he's tried to do some, you know, the Rabbi of Efrat has tried to do some historical research, and he claims that Rabbeinu Tam almost single-handedly changed the whole course of halakhic development. He claims that before Rabbeinu Tam, everybody was going in the direction of the Rambam. Rabbeinu Tam like switched the whole river currents in the other direction, which is a very, very interesting point. But in a way, you know, it's not directly relevant because if the water was switched, we kind of have to work within the channel as we presently have it. However,
what kind of time is that to say that 100 years ago it was different, but now it's different? Why should we go back to the old ways? Obviously, halacha changed for a reason. Gedolim early figured something out.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, the Gedolim followed Rabbeinu Tam.
And therefore, he's trying to prove that there was a different issue.
It's a very interesting thing, right? Riskin was trying in the first part of his book, but he seemed to have changed his mind in the second part. It was very interesting. He wrote a book on the Aguna issue, and like 90% of the book was trying to show that the Rambam was right. So you'd figure that his ultimate conclusion would be, let's go back to the Rambam. But in the last 10 pages, he comes up with a prenuptial agreement. Like, he kind of dropped the whole thing. But Rabbi Riskin, I think, was arguing, although he didn't want to... It seemed pretty obvious he was arguing this, but apparently he didn't want to make the explicit argument. Although the whole book argues this.
Do only Hagim follow the Rambam, or are there some people who follow the Rambam?
On this issue? No, this issue, nobody follows the Rambam. However, I want to say this. Within, however, the virtually universal practice of following Rabbeinu Tam, there's a great deal of variation. Because keep in mind that Rabbeinu Tam and the Rambam are not necessarily so far apart. The Rambam says a woman can get an order by just saying, I don't like the guy. Rabbeinu Tam says she has to do more. So she has to show he abuses her, etc., etc. Now, some Beis Dins have been very, very sympathetic to finding this type of abuse, other but they didn't have not been. Now, this is the problem, I think I mentioned the other day, that in Israel, where once a Beis Din issues an order, a guy could be imprisoned, it is said that fewer than 5% of the cases where women ask for such an order, do they get it. So, even in Eretz Yisrael, where there's a tremendous ability to help the women, many judges, many Batei Din are very reluctant to do so. Yeah.
What's the difference between, according to the Rambam too, like why wouldn't the Torah just give women the ability to give them themselves? Because like, I understand there's a difference, they don't actually get it, they get
right.
an order, but like, if it's supposed to be given, like, I don't understand why.
Well, I hear, but I don't have a tremendously good answer for that. The point is that even the Rambam would clearly admit that we don't change the get procedure. The get procedure still requires that the man gives the get to the woman. So it's not that a woman can just get a divorce. That's why I don't want to say the word she gets a divorce. She doesn't get a divorce. She gets an order of a Beis Din directing the husband or his shaliach to give her a get. But yeah.
A man doesn't have to give any reason, does he?
Well, this is the thing. According to the under Torah law, a man can divorce a woman for no reason at all. However, under the ban of Rabbeinu Gershom, a man can only divorce a woman if she consents. So he does need her consent, but at the same time, he theoretically does not have to give a reason if that consent is present. But of course, that would make it a divorce by mutual consent, in which case reasons don't have to be. I mean, we discourage it, obviously. Obviously, we discourage it. We regard divorce as a tragedy in many cases. But in terms of the ability to give the get, you do have the ability to give the get by mutual consent. Yeah, this is an interesting question, and it's a matter of great definition, definitional uncertainty. Rav Ben Dahan, who's the administrator of the rabbinical courts, claims there are fewer than 50 agunot in the entire world. 50 women that are agunot. Then you have women's groups that claim there are 15,000 agunot. Now, how do you explain a discrepancy like that? The answer is it all depends on how you define agunot. The women's groups, some of them define aguna as any woman who wants to get out of a marriage who hasn't gotten her get yet. Most of them are Orthodox.
So anyone in the divorce process?
Yeah. Now, these people haven't gone to a Beis Din yet. They have not had the Beis Din hear their case, etc. So, you know, if you talk about women who haven't even bothered to go to the Beis Din, they just say, I want to get, and the husband says no, they already put him down as an aguna. Under Rav Ben Dahan's definition, a woman is an aguna only if a Beis Din has issued an order to the husband to give a get. And after X amount of time, I'm not sure how much time he's using in his definition, after X amount of time he refuses, then she's an aguna. The problem with Rav Ben Dahan's definition, though, is he fails to take into account the fact that in such a tiny proportion of cases does a Beis Din never even give a woman an order. In other words, he's taking, by definition, a very, very small percentage of women who are stuck because only the women who got the order. So if we were to try to give a true definition, all I can tell you is it would be somewhere between 50 and 15,000. And the answer would be somewhere in the middle. So, but Rav Ben Dahan's definition is very, very, although it's technically correct, but it's very, very small because the basins are reluctant to do it. So... So that's one thing. So one consideration is the grounds for a get. But again, as I say, in the United States in particular, that doesn't help very much, because even if a basin issues a decision, who's going to enforce it? And even if it doesn't help that much, because some people are willing to rot in jail, and other people, the basin doesn't issue an order. Right? So what's going to happen? So there have been other things that have been suggested to help women. One is what's called the conditional marriage. Conditional marriage, which does not help women already married, but this would mean, let's have a condition. You know, if anyone learned Gittin or Kedushin, you know that it's possible, although we generally don't do it today, it's possible to marry somebody on a condition. I could say, for example, I could give a woman a ring and say, Hariyak Mekadeshet Li, you are married to me on the condition, let's assume, I don't know if I could support a wife, right? So I just had a job interview on Friday, and I'm going to hear on Monday whether I got the job or not, but my wedding is scheduled for Sunday. Now, the problem is that if I don't get that job on Monday, I can't support my wife, so I don't want to get married. Let's assume she's not going to work, whatever it is. So what I could do is, it's already under the chuppah, right? So I don't want to cancel the wedding invitations. So what I could do is, hopefully nobody would hear me, but the witnesses would have to hear me, I could give a ring to my wife, to the Maikala, and say, Hare at Mekudeshesli, you are married to me, al manas, on the condition that I get a job tomorrow. That's called Tanai. Tanai is condition. Now what does that mean? That means the following. If I get the job tomorrow, you are married to me from today. It's retroactive. You are married to me from today. If I don't get the job tomorrow, you were never married to me. You don't need a get for that. If a condition is not fulfilled, the marriage is void all the way back. So let's consider this. Just think about this. I marry my wife on the condition that I get a job tomorrow. Let's assume she commits adultery Sunday night. Has she committed the sin of adultery? The answer is, you don't know. If I get the job Monday, she has been married to me from Sunday, and her union with another man was adulterous. If I didn't get the job, then she was never married to me, and the sin of being with the other man was just premarital relations. It was not adultery. So if I like my wife, I will specifically not get the job on Monday. And that way I can absolve her of committing the capital offense of adultery. If I don't like my wife, even if I don't get the job, I will ask my boss to reconsider. And thereby she will be guilty of adultery. Okay? That's the concept of condition. You can make a marriage on a condition. All right. Now here is what has been proposed for the Agunage. Let every man, at the time he marries his wife, state, Hare at Mekudeshet Li, behold, you are married to me, on the condition that in the event you ever get a civil divorce, I give you a religious divorce within, let us say, 30 days of the civil divorce. Now, see what that does. What that says is the following. In the event the woman gets a civil divorce, and I don't give her a religious divorce, the necessary condition for the validity of the marriage was not kept. And therefore, she was never married to me, even though we lived together for many years. In other words, it's possible to make a condition that may not occur until 20 or 30 years later, and it can invalidate the entire marriage. So this way, the woman is protected. Mimanafshach. If I give her the divorce, she's divorced. If I give her a get. If I don't give her a get, the condition that was necessary for the marriage never took place. And if it never took place, she doesn't need a get because she was never married to me. Right? So this is the shaila of whether we could, as it were, protect all agunos, by making a kedushin al tanai, a kedushin on this condition.
And don't you have a problem that if if the condition is not fulfilled, then the whole marriage they were living unmarried is going over all sorts of these
Avera is premarital sex, yeah. What else? That would be the only Avera, I would think.
What do the kids become?
The kids are not Mamzerim. If a man and a woman live together without marriage, the kids are not Mamzerim. They're okay.
Great.
All right. Yeah, did you want to say something? Yeah.
I think that, Gemara Shir that I've been learning in Gittin,
right.
There's a Gemara where they can nullify, if a person tries to nullify a get, then the rabbis can then go back and actually nullify the marriage.
Yeah, that's another possible approach. I'll get
because
to.
Because of the implied consent of the rabbis
right,
to any
right,
religious.
Right, right. Is the following. There's a sugya, there's a Gemara in Maseches Kesuvos that basically says you can marry a woman on a condition if you want, but once a marriage has been physically consummated by intercourse, that becomes absolute and is no longer subject to condition. So, for example, the case the Gemara gives is the following. Let's say I marry, or let me give you my earlier example. I marry a woman and I say, this marriage should be valid only if I get a job on Monday. But if Sunday night I consummate the marriage is treated as absolute even if I don't get the job. Meaning I can only use conditions to invalidate marriage before a marriage has been consummated. Once a marriage has been consummated, the commitment is considered to be absolute. So you may ask, well, gee, so why is there a whole discussion in the Talmud about conditions? It seems like they're always going to be thrown out of the window because you consummate that. Well, the answer is, keep in mind that at the time of the Gemara, between the betrothal and the consummation, there was 1 year. So there was, right? In other words, in the time of the Gemara, I would give the bride a ring and marry her, but we would not consummate the marriage for a whole year. She would remain in her father's house. So consequently, during that year, if the condition wasn't kept, you know, she would not need a get. But today, where we, you know, between the marriage ceremony and the consummation is generally going to be the same day or the next night, whatever it is. So generally speaking, as a practical matter, the conditions aren't going to help very much. Because once there is bia, that is considered to be an invalidation of all conditions. Again, philosophically, it's a very interesting idea. The idea is that marital intercourse is an expression on a deep psychological level of the absolute commitment that husband and wife have to each other. And therefore that's inconsistent with the concept, oh, if I don't get the job tomorrow, we're not married. In other words, you can't have that split mentality and go ahead with the bia. You can have that split mentality in a betrothal, but you can't have that split mentality in the bia. So because of that, the condition, now again, people are arguing that people say, again, you have to understand there's a lot of, in a way, because the Aguna issue is a very emotional issue, and it's a tragic issue for many women, and because some of the feminist groups have overinflated the numbers. So again, this is a very, very painful problem, but they've made it numerically much worse than it is. And because you have semi-Orthodox or very, very modern left-wing Orthodox rabbis who are proposing very, very positions, which the feminist groups embrace. So this is an area where halakha is being very, very challenged and it's attacked by many people. So you have rabbis that might say, well, that old rule in the Gemara that says when the parties have intercourse, they don't have conditions anymore, that shouldn't apply in contemporary society, etc. And they try to make real changes in halakha, which frankly, the poskim have said are illegitimate, are improper. You can't go with it. Therefore the conditional marriage, which is sometimes still brought up, seems to be a solution that does not work once a marriage has been consummated. Yeah.
So So it's not tully in the kinyan, but rather in the act of dia. Because if you were kind of her with money,
yeah, well,
we're saying that it doesn't have an intrinsic effect, meaning that there wasn't an emotional.
Well, that's correct. You could be kind of her with money and still have a tanai. But you can't do bia and have a tanai. That's ein ad ma'isa bilasa bilasas. All right, now, so we've meant. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Situation where both students survive, is there always some means of achieving differences which prevents public real division? I'm not talking about some one left-wing radical rabbi.
Well, you have to understand that when it comes to Gittin, there is a very built-in conservatism in the process, meaning the following. If somebody asks a Rav, are you allowed to use a Shabbos elevator? And some rabbis say no, and some rabbi says yes. A rabbi who believes yes will say yes, even if another rabbi says no, because those who follow the yes will do the yes, and those who follow the no will do the no. When it comes to gets, and one rabbi says, this way of an aguna is okay, conditional marriage. And another rabbi says it's not okay, assuming you're respectable. Even the rabbi who says yes is not going to permit its use, because how can he permit something which in the view of other eminent rabbis produces mamzerim? Meaning, the area of get is an area where responsible poskim do not take unilateral action for which there is sharp disagreement, because that's going to have repercussions on someone's standing in the community. So it's very, very different. When it comes to a Shabbos observance, whatever it is, each Rav will follow his own view. When it comes to gets, I will not, as it were, innovate something that I believe is okay unless it has the agreements of other eminent poskim. Now, it doesn't mean it'll have 100% agreement, but at least there'll have to be a substantial degree of consensus. So,
the marriage was the consummate. Relationship was already in existence, and the couple were living together prior to the marriage, engaging in sexual activity.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, but it seems from the Gemara that there would have to be post kiddushin consummation. Post, in other words, after the marriage. In other words, the pre kiddushin consummation would not count. That's correct. Until they have a post kiddushin consummation. Right. Okay, now, yeah. So, conditional marriage has been one approach that's been suggested. Another approach has been what you just brought up before, and that is the Gemara discusses in a few places the ability of the rabbis, by the rabbis I mean the Beis Din, to annul marriages without need of get. Afkinu Rabbanan, Kiddushin Mine. The Rabbanan uprooted the marriage. Now, the Gemara uses this phrase, Afkinu Rabbanan Kiddushin Mine, in around six places in Shas. One of those places is in Maseches Gittin, that's the Gemara that people are learning here. That involved a man that sent a get to his wife through a shaliach. And he attempted to cancel the shalichus without telling the shaliach. So there's a real big problem there. The shaliach is going to go ahead and give the wife a get. She'll think she's divorced, when in fact she's not divorced. So the Gemara's answer is, well, in such a case, the Rabbanan annulled the marriage retroactively, and there's no need for there to be a get. So some people take these words out of context. Afkinu Rabbanan.
So what's the? How do they annul it? They know which marriage, the first marriage.
They annul the first marriage. That's right. They say that if a man gives a get to his wife through a shaliach and tries to be mavatel the shaliach,
bittul doesn't work.
Shalom b'fanav, not in front of the shaliach. So the woman is permitted to remarry when she gets the get, because the Rabbanan annulled the marriage, the first marriage, retroactively, l'mafreya.
When he gave the get to the shaliach?
Well, annulment is l'mafreya, that if a man gives a get to a shaliach and tries to cancel the get without telling the shaliach, the Rabbanan said, in such a situation, we regard the first marriage as if it never existed.
Why?
Never existed.
Why?
Well, why? Because the alternative would be, because otherwise the woman would not know. So in other words, if you follow...
Just say that he can't make a bittul, not in front of the shliach.
Yeah, but how does that work? Because under Torah law, it's a good bittul. So under Torah law, the get is not a get.
Oh.
If under Torah law, it's an element of shalichus, so the get is not a get. Under Torah law, she's not divorced. If under Torah law she's not divorced, any marriage she has is adultery, and the kids are going to be mamzerim. Right? So the answer is that the Rabbanan enacted a takana that in such a case we consider it as if they were never married. Now the question becomes, of course, well, gee, can the Rabbanan just say in any marriage we want to annul it? Basically, the Rishonim say that this is a power that might only be limited to the Sanhedrin, which we don't have today. And it might be a power that's only limited to the very specific instances in Shas, and it's not necessarily a general principle. That's a bit of a controversy. I'm sorry, what time do you have? Is this time too? Okay. We'll talk about this. I'm just trying to think. I don't want to... Alright, we'll either talk about it tomorrow or not, depending on which additional people come. I don't want to throw people off who are coming from Megillah, but... we'll continue with this tomorrow. That what I want to mention, I still have two more things I want to mention about this. I'll just introduce them now. And that is, so we talked about the grounds for divorce, which is Rabbeinu Tam and the Rambam. We talked about conditional marriage. We talked about rabbinic annulment. There's a fourth thing I mentioned the other day, and that is, in some cases of Aguna, we can show that the original marriage was non-halachically valid, like conservative or reform marriages, right, which would help in some cases. Right, so that's a fourth way. There is a fifth way, which is kind of very, very, very radical, and that is, this was proposed by the rabbinate in Morocco in the 19th century, and that is, hey, if we don't want women to be Agunos anymore, let's get rid of marriage, and let's replace it by legalized concubinage. A concubine is a pilegesh. What is a pilegesh? A pilegesh is a mistress. According to some Rishonim, not all Rishonim, so this is not halacha lemaisa here, this is not a practical halacha. According to some Rishonim, a man is allowed to have a mistress that he did not marry. Now, a pilegesh doesn't need a get, right? That's the good news. The good news about a pilegesh is she's free to go without a get. The bad news is there are none of the economic responsibilities towards a mistress that you have towards a wife. So the rabbi of Morocco proposed, let's replace marriage with pilegesh coupled with contracts that say you will support the pilegesh. It's like a kesuvah. You will support the pilegesh at a certain level. This way, we never have an aguna problem because the women are perfectly free to leave when they're not happy. Now, this was very roundly criticized because this was considered to be like killing a flea. I mean, say, aguna is a very tragic problem for a small percentage of women. So, to protect a small percentage of women, you want to destroy the fundamental institution of the Jewish family, which is kedushin, which is marriage. You want to get rid of marriage, you know. That's like saying, people say sometimes, in fact, this is a psychological reaction, that someone doesn't want to have a child because if, God forbid, you know, the child dies, they're going to suffer so much. So therefore, let's not have a child. By the way, this is a reaction some people have, particularly if they've lost a child. But you see, that's nonsensical, really, because then you'll never experience the joys. So to say, let's not have marriage because in some of those marriages there'll be agunas, would be destroying the sanctity of kedushin in Klal Yisrael. So this has been very much rejected. Yeah.
I heard that there was going on.
Yes, that's very true. There's a crazy organization in New York, which, by the way, goes by the name Shalom Bayis, Peace in the Home. In which I'm not sure if there's the Washington Post had a big, I think it was a big Chil Hashem, because the Washington Post had a big article. You know, they look for these things, talking about Hasidish guys who were running a way of giving people mistresses, pilegesh. And you know, there are minority opinions in halacha that permit it, that we can't deny that. but they are minority opinions, and it certainly undermines. I mean, and the guy was saying how it diffuses tension and this and that, all sorts of very, very distasteful things. But anyway, be it as it may, so we've mentioned, I think, so far, five different ways, some of which are less acceptable than others, which halakha has tried to help women. One is the issue of a based and issuing an order, which is the machlokes Rambam and Rabbeinu Tam. The second is conditional marriage. The third is rabbinic annulment. The fourth, which is for a reformer conservative, is to find some defect in the kashrus of the witnesses so that you don't need a get. And the fifth has been the institution of concubine. There has been a sixth proposal, too. And the sixth proposal has said the following. At the time I marry a woman, I designate a certain beis din to be my shaliach in writing a get. In other words, you see what that, in other words, what I do is the following. I marry a woman and I designate Rabbi so-and-so, I hereby make you my agent to write a get upon the request of my wife. So the proposal is that if 30 years later the wife wants a get, she can go to the shaliach of the husband and have the get written. In other words, it's making the shaliach of a get in advance of the marriage. But once again, that seems to be a totally illogical solution for a very simple reason. If I make somebody a shaliach at any time I want, I can cancel it. So, if I make somebody a shaliach, all I got to do 2 months later is say, I hereby revoke it. You know, what's going to be? No, so that doesn't work either. So, what we'll talk about next time, I'm not sure if it'll be tomorrow or another day, we'll have to, but I do want to have one more session, is I want to talk about two secular laws that were passed by the state of New York to help Agunas, and whether these secular laws are valid in halacha is a very big machlokas between many gedolim. It's a very controversial issue. And then I'll discuss some prenuptial agreements, agreements that people sign before they get married, dealing with this issue. Okay, so that'll be one more session on this. Okay. A Shomer Shabbos legislator pushed those laws through, but he did not consult with some of the great posts. And ironically, the law has some halachic problems with it.
You mentioned at the beginning, you said something about how if the wife decides that, you know, husband's, you know, doesn't want to be with the husband anymore. But then you were saying that this is questionable whether it would be grounds for a gift, because then it could just give the woman an excuse to marry somebody
else. This is what Rabbeinu Tam says, yes.
What does it turn out? What do we follow today?
We follow that view.
So a woman can't ask for abortion because she gets tired of her husband?
That's correct. Well, she can ask, but she won't, unless it's by mutual consent, the basin will not order the man to give a woman a divorce.
Really?
The basin will not order a man to give a divorce because the woman says she's tired of it.
But a man can, obviously. I mean, a man can decide he's tired of his wife.
Well, under Torah law, but not really. After Rabbeinu Gershom's enactment, if the man says he's tired and the woman says, I refuse, he can't do it either.
Oh, really?
So actually, there's symmetry there.
What do you mean? They can give and get whatever
you
want.
Under Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, she has to agree.
So if she doesn't agree, he has to have substantial reason why she should agree.
And
if he doesn't, then he can't give it?
That's correct. After the Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom.
What if she doesn't even agree if he has good reason?
Well, then he might be able to get a heter of 100 rabbanim and deposit the get in escrow. I mean, generally speaking, Rabbeinu Gershom kind of was, he cannot divorce a woman against her will. Mm-hmm. Now, if he has substantial grounds, he deposits the get in Beis Din, and he gets 100 rabbis who permit him to have polygamy. So he doesn't divorce her, but he gets a heter to have another wife.
So the next wife would be a polygamist.
Would be another wife. They have two wives. In other words, 100 rabbis, I don't know if we talked about this, can be a way of annulling the ban of Rabbeinu Gershom against marrying two wives.
The ban of Rabbeinu Gershom or something?
Originally it was made until the beginning of the 6th millennium,
right.
Which was the year 5000, but they renewed it. So Shulchan Aruch says they extended it.
Okay. What was the purpose of that year in the Talmudic times when they had the year between the betrothal and the Kedushin?
Yeah, that's a very excellent question. It seems to be somewhat economic. It's kind of to give the woman time to get the dowry necessary.
Oh, because they had to pay the...
Right, because the woman's family would bring in the property to the husband. And you know who collapsed it? You know who basically said, we combine it? It was Rashi. Rashi, the name of Rashi. He made it a unified ceremony. So that takes you to, what, the 1000s, the 11th century.
So it went all the way till the 11th?
Yeah, yeah, apparently. I think it's actually credited to Rashi. Rashi thought it was... that it was conducive to immorality to have such a long betrothal period.
What do we do today? What is the custom today? Is there such a thing as dowries? Is this common, or is it not just whatever a person wants? How does it work?
It all depends. I'll give you an example. In Hasidic communities, it's almost essential. And in yeshiva communities, guys who want to be in kollel, it's very often, it's an awful thing. Sometimes it's required. It's very customary. I mean, it's a big source of tension. Because here you have guys, because now that you have second or third generation kollel people, it's an amazing thing. They can't marry off their children. In other words, let's assume that I'm a kollel guy, a poor, impoverished scholar who has given my life to Torah. And I have a daughter. I may not be able to marry her off, because the good guys who are learning are looking for somebody who has money. And I don't have money. Of course, what's going to happen to their daughters is a very interesting thing. Yeah. What goes around comes around, you know. Yeah.
Well,
so
with this, yeah. This thing with the having such a long period, right, and now it's been put into one
ceremony. Day, one ceremony.
It would seem then that there would be a lack of a mechanism for recognizing annulment because of non-consummation.
That's correct. That's basically it. As a practical, all the rabbinic annulment is not subject to that, but the idea of conditions is basically a dead letter today, because there's virtually no gap between betrothal and consummation. Therefore, there really is no practical way you can invalidate a marriage because of a condition. That's correct. And that's the whole Talmudic discussion, which presupposes annulment, is predicated on having that 1 year gap. And today we don't have that, so that's not going to happen. Yeah. Okay, have a good day.
I was interested in the